everyone. Welcome back to the Deeper Podcast. I'm Austin Slater. That's Dan Kinnis. I'm wearing shorts because it's like 70 degrees outside. It is lovely. I hope that whenever you're watching this, it is still lovely. Dan, how are you doing this last week leading up to Easter?
Good. I have enjoyed these last couple of days. It's been nice to have some comfortable temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's probably not going to quite last yet, but
we're getting it. Listen, the closer we are to danger, the farther we are from harm, as some might say. I'm loving it. It's great. We are in the last week leading up till Easter, which is wild how early Easter has come this year. But that means we're also almost to the end of this series, it would appear. So I guess let's dive in first. What did we talk about this last week?
Yeah, with it being the week before Easter, it's Palm Sunday. And so we've been doing this series in the wilderness and Jesus in the wilderness. So this was kind of a transitional week. And of course, you have the Palm Sunday text when Jesus triumphantly enters into Jerusalem there and comes in as king in the Gospels. And I was struck by how the text we've been in Matthew 4, when Jesus comes out of the wilderness and begins his ministry, his preaching there, how it's very similar to when he's coming into Jerusalem at the end. What he says verbally at the outset is the same as what he does visually, physically, at the end and coming into Jerusalem. And that's proclaiming the kingdom of heaven's come near. And of course, now's the time to respond. And so just striking to see that. So we kind of made that connection with the consistency of Jesus' message and how, yeah, this relates to what he does physically on Palm Sunday. But then also just saw the kind of surprising way in which Jesus' ministry begins, in which this kingdom is coming to us. The surprising kind of withdrawal at the start, where there's a seeming moment, oh, great opportunity for confrontation. Jesus, Herod threw John the Baptist in prison, but he goes up to Galilee. And then, well, Galilee itself is kind of surprising. Why not just Jerusalem? Even if you're not going to confront Herod, I mean, there's the place, but he goes to Galilee. And then even the message itself about repentance doesn't seem like where he'd start out to win people's hearts, but that's where he goes. And so we just talked about those kind of unexpected pieces of the kingdom coming, what it teaches us about the kingdom and Jesus himself. And then, yeah, what does that mean for us if we follow this king and want to be citizens of this kingdom and are? How does that impact the way we should then go about it? So, yeah, just a good, I think, way to kind of bring, you know, the wilderness, coming out of the wilderness, and, yeah, the kingdom's coming near as we go toward Easter. Of course, that's the good news. But, yeah, good to reflect on some aspects of mission, too.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And I always love Palm Sunday because, again, it's so interesting to look back on Palm Sunday and see, you know, symbolism or things like that, that like we don't like we do the palm branches thing. Everyone knows. Yeah. Palm Sunday. The kids have palm branches. And, you know, but again, it is always good to go and revisit that and see the ways that, you know, Jesus 2000 years ago was flipping everything that the world expected on its head. It's always such a cool time of year. I actually have a question somewhat related to that, Dan. So when, you know, when we see Jesus enter into Jerusalem, he enters on a donkey and they've got the palm branches and they're laying it out in front. And, you know, if you've been around discussions of faith and especially around this for a while, like you'd know that there is some correlation there to how kings would enter cities that they had conquered. You know, they would enter in on a mighty war horse and people would lay these things in front. And that would be how, you know, the triumphal entry into the city that they had conquered. And obviously with Jesus doing this, he's kind of flipping that on its head. He's saying, you know, I'm not coming on a war horse as a conquering king, but I'm doing something different. And so I thought that was really interesting because in that moment, Jesus is using a very well-known image, a very well-known tool that these kings had in that day, but flipping it on its head.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked a little bit during the service about how, you know, we're supposed to be doing things, again, Jesus, and this is what we've been talking about the last several weeks, is like, we're doing this God's way, not the way of the world. And here we see Jesus taking something that is the way of the world and kind of flipping it and changing it. So I kind of, obviously, you know, this is stretching an analogy. You can only go so far, but I'm wondering how in our modern context, we might be able to kind of understand one of those. And so I wanted to throw at you the concept of social media.
Mm-hmm.
Because social media is what our interactive world seems to be based on, at least heavily influenced on these days. This is a tool that, like, for better, worse, good, bad, and ugly, it is one of the greatest equalizers in that anyone can, you know, use this tool. You get enough followers, you get enough reach, you get enough influence. You can use this tool really well, really powerfully. On the other hand, we've started to see how that can be really harmful, and how, especially for those of us who are believers, you know, we believe we are called to a higher standard for how we use the tools of the world. We're not supposed to be using the tools of the world in the ways of the world.
Right.
So just when it comes to the topic of just social media, things like this in general in our modern times, how do you think we can, you know, just be cautious that we're making sure we're using that in a godly way? And do you have any idea, like, how do we make sure that we are using these tools in a godly, God-honoring way and not using it in the way that the world has designed them to be used?
Right. No, that's a very good question, because this is something in our day and age that is very prevalent and very useful as far as communications, even relationships, lots of different things. And really, of course, you see, you know, whether it was in Jesus' day, as you just mentioned, example, going back to the Old Testament, there's always been this kind of recapturing. That's a very reformed way of looking at it, I guess, but this kind of recapturing of the things of the world. So even look at some of the festivals that God ordained for his people, you know, when they have these like new moon feasts and celebrations, a lot of that was taking things that were in other cultures and say, well, we're going to now point this back where it belongs, in God's direction and for his glory. And so certainly as Christians, you know, there's things that probably are overall largely unhealthy for us to be interacting with.
Yeah, I'm not sure necessarily how we could like retake the cocaine scene.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, some side it's used in medicine, perhaps, but general, right.
Yeah.
But I mean, overall, there's lots of, like you said, tools in this world. How do we use them for God's glory? And we had, I guess, a line in the sermon, right? It was on the slides, you know, Jesus, you know, not entering into that combat with Herod right there and then, but going up to Galilee as being, well, he wasn't attention seeking. That wasn't the heart of his ministry and mission. It was his heart for the lost. He was seeking to save the lost. And so we needed to go where they were, where the darkness was, where the wilderness was. And so I think for us too, as we're going to interact with social media, to use this example, we need to make sure the heart of why we're doing so is correct, right? Or lining up with Jesus' heart and ministry. Because yes, some of these things are going to go in tandem, right? We talk about it jokingly, you know, with this podcast. Obviously, we're not looking to have a massive reach, but if nobody was watching it at all, well, we
probably wouldn't be doing
what we're doing, right? I have time, energy, resources that go toward this. So yeah, I understand that too. If you're trying to reach people via any platform, you need to have some connection and maybe some finances that come with it to be able to have that reach and produce the things that need to be produced. So I understand those connections are there, but what's the point of it, right? It's so easy, I think, to kind of get lost, especially if we gain more and more attention in that being the heart of it. More attention, more resources, more finances that come with it, rather than why are we doing this in the first place? And I think you can even see in scripture sometimes where good things, of course, can go the other way, right? I think of the story where in Numbers where God saved the people. They were, had a plague. The snakes were biting them and put up this pole with a snake on it. Well, later on, this great, you know, reminder of God's healing becomes an idol. Or Gideon, they had his ephod. You know, this became an idol. And, you know, so we can twist things around. Platforms that can be very useful and have allowed us to bless people with the good news of Jesus Christ, we can then lose that heart and have it be pointed at us or at some other idol too. So I think just that, you know, checking why are we doing this? And every step of the way, because we can go in with very good intentions, the right heart, but we got to make sure that maintains, which is harder to do, I think, the more attention we receive. And that just stokes our egos and that underlying wanting to elevate ourselves or what we're involved with. And so we always need to be cautious of that. And then that can go to a lot of other things too. But social media, I think, is one thing that plays into that. Oh, look at, I can see right there the engagement.
And look, 85 people liked what I had to say, and half of them even loved it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's on everything, right? I mean, I'll go on some message boards for some of the teams I follow and stuff, and you make a little post, like whatever, and you can see right there, you know, oh, 25 people like that, and it's a silly, you know, comment like, hey, great win or something, but, oh, yeah, everybody liked that, you know, and so that's just the world we live in, that just kind of attention seeking, but also feeding our attention deficit, as it were, right? We love to be loved. And so we need to be aware of that. And I think it connects with then not just the way we go about our mission and the heart of that, but being reminded of the one who gives us what we need, and that being Jesus Christ. Part of our wilderness or darkness is this identity issue we have, where we're just starved and looking for love, really, and this desire to be, I think, useful as well, and see, like, what am I here for? And God's proclamation to us is that this is what he gives to us in Jesus Christ. He sees us this way. He loves us so much, he's gone to the cross. So those things go hand in hand. The one, you know, going up to Galilee, because he cares so much about the people there, he cares so much about all of us, he came to earth. And then, all right, what does that look like? Knowing that then to be on mission with him. And so we can't, or at least I wouldn't advise like just saying, no, we can't use any of that stuff. And no social media, it's just too dangerous. I think that's in some ways undermining what we believe about God and his power and the work of his spirit. But we do need to be cautious.
And very intentional when we're doing that.
Yes. And be accountable to each other in those conversations too, because it's very easy in my own mind to think, I'm doing it just fine. Yeah, it's not an issue for me. So,
and they're like, oh, maybe I am. But we never think that.
No.
Going up to Galilee then, because you were talking about Galilee, I'd love to, you know, take our own little trip there, as it were, because we talked, a bit already today and then on Sunday a lot about how, like, Jesus went to Galilee, which was not where you would go if you want to influence the culture.
Right.
Like, you know, Jerusalem is the center of political, cultural, religious, theological, social, all of the business.
Yeah.
All of this stuff happens here. And we still see this now. You know, we look at places like, you know, New York, L.A., Washington, D.C., and you're like, if I want to make a difference in the world, I need to go there. I need to, you know, people need to be based there. And, you know, from a numbers perspective, there's one thing to talk about that. But when it comes to how we're handling our faith and how we look at people, we really need to make sure that we don't let that happen to us. Little slight sidebar, but my wife and I talk all the time about how much we love living in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Metaphorically. And that, you know, West Michigan is not important on the grand scale of the nation necessarily. Like, it's very important to us, to those of us who live here. But by and large, like, we're not having a lot of massive news stuff type, you know, international news stuff happen here. You know, we're not having big international conferences in, you know, Byron Center and
right.
Like, this is just a normal place for normal people. Kind of like what Galilee was in a lot of ways, which is beautiful. And we love that. That's something we value a lot, is being in a place where people are just people.
Mm-hmm.
However, even though this is not where we would say the national spirit flows from,
right,
we find our own structures and we build our own structures of power and we build our own, okay, well, this is the place where you go for this sort of influence, and people over there or people who do that, not so much. So regardless of wherever we are going to construct these centers of power. We're going to construct these places where this is where you should go. This is where it is cool to be. And that's where it's not. And clearly, if our attitude is to be the same as that of Christ Jesus, we're to go to Galilee first.
Mm.
So how do we make sure that even in our corner of the world that we like to think of, that we pride ourselves in thinking of as quiet, not important on the massive scale of things, how do we make sure that we don't keep self-sorting?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because you're naming the reality, even if we know, like, yeah, we're not in a huge, highly populated area, nevertheless, we mostly always think, yeah, we still do it the best. Yeah.
And even, you know, as someone who's even just Michigan in general, yep, like, the joke is we're going to make fun of people in Ohio because they're in Ohio.
Sure.
And as much, you know, as much as I get the sports thing and I love the tongue-in-cheek rivalry, like, that is something that we kind of have normalized, is looking down on someone for where they come from.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I mean, again, you can do the little kind of radiating circles going out, right? You can say, you know, here, West Michigan, we look at the rest of the state like, oh, man, if they got on board with us, they'd be better off. You can go to the state, like you said. You can take the region of the Midwest. Often we look at things, oh, man, the Midwest, way better than East Coast, West Coast, South. And then you go to the country and we look around the world and say, ah, oh, man, the U.S., we have it figured out. So it doesn't matter how big the circle is or little. We tend to naturally kind of hold up our way of doing things and our circles we run in and hold down or look sideways at other circles. And again, to Austin's point, when it comes to especially this missional aspect and having conversations and going where we're called to go, that can be a big issue. One of the things we brought up is that you kind of like, well, one, you can have like no hope that, well, yeah, you know, they're never going to, those people in D.C., oh my. I mean, they're
hopeless.
Why even go there? Well, look what's going on there. You look at those cities. Or if, yeah, you're more rural, looking at a city like, well, there's no, I mean, it's terrible, or vice versa.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you could look, Jesus, people in Jerusalem looked at Galilee and might have thought like, wow, that's, look at this backwater kind of mixture.
Mm-hmm.
But people from Galilee would have looked at Jerusalem and probably had similar thoughts, you know? What are they doing down there? They're all corrupt. Maybe some of this sounds familiar. I mean, you know, like, we do these things. And so that enters into then the way I am willing or not willing maybe to really offer or seek out presenting the gospel to someone, mm-hmm. right? Because I might say, one, there's no hope. They're never going to receive it. Two, I really don't want them to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we wouldn't say this. I don't think they're even deserving. That's kind of the communication that was going on about Galilee from Jerusalem. Like, oh, yeah, they're kind of beyond hope. Those tax collector sinners, they kind of hear that. But just like, oh, yeah, this pagan influence. So we start thinking, even at our own circles, like, yeah, you know, why bother? We've labeled everybody the swine,
right?
So to speak. And so we do need to be careful. And I think some of that learning that you were getting at, how do we manage that? One is to remind ourselves, you know, Jesus came down from heaven. God himself entered into our flesh, the ultimate incarnation, of course, and going to the foreign place, as it were. The difficult spot for us.
Like, given how vast and beautiful the universe is, Earth is, you know, way backwater.
Right, right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And yeah, just coming into our mess, we talk about that, our wilderness, our darkness. So that, of course, should keep us in line. But then also, you know, if you really think about your own story, and certainly your story of faith, but even life in general, and often very significant things happen when someone entered into your life that probably, you know, didn't need to, or took a step, you know, because, yeah, they were coming from a different place. It was a teacher who took some time with you as a student, even though they're a teacher, a professor, whatever it might be, or a pastor, or just, you know, someone who had maybe a different status or came from a different place than you. And it can go both ways. But I mean, those things make a huge difference for us. They often have a big part. So knowing that too, like just to get out, like this matters. And of course, we learn more as we do that. We don't just stay insulated in our own peace. We learn from each other and grow in that too. But from a missional aspect, again, what Jesus is saying, I've come to seek and save the lost. I mean, here's Galilee. And Matthew, of course, is delighting, showing like, yeah, we know they were the first conquered there by Assyria. And, you know, it was kind of a mess. They came back and it was, you know, a mix of people coming back and all this and that. But Jesus is saying, this is where I need to go. This is the frontier.
Yeah.
And we need to go start.
Well, and that's where he even originated.
Right. Well, yeah, it's his hometown.
Can anything good come of Nazareth? Is, you know, they're talking specifically about Nazareth in Galilee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of like what we would sometimes say about Gary, Indiana.
Sure. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Or any, name your place. I mean, and again, we all have five places we would name, or even families, to get even more specific. Yeah. Sometimes we label. So maybe it's that hope too,
mm-hmm.
Rekindling that, because I said that's one of the reasons maybe we don't, is that Jesus sees hope for Galilee and Nazareth and even for the nations, of course. And he's kind of reaching, you know, he'll allow through the Spirit his disciples really to spread that good news to the nations. But he's already showing that way, like, hey, this is Galilee of the nations.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of an intermixture of all these different people. And he's going there because there's hope with the kingdom coming near. And so I think we need to have that hope as well, that yes, this person, I maybe don't quite understand, it's different, maybe there's been rejection before, but there's hope in the name of Jesus.
If he's
claimed a person like me, certainly there's hope for somebody else too.
And but for the grace of God, there go I, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Slight then tangent from Galilee then. One of the quotes we had up on the wall was that bearing the light of Jesus might mean getting uncomfortable. And we talk about this a lot. We talked about this a lot on the podcast that, like, you know, it is really important to be uncomfortable and have uncomfortable conversations with people who are very different than you, right? And, you know, we always will throw out, you know, the person begging on the side of the road and how, you know, it is important to see the light of Jesus in them and see the image of God in them. And, you know, and that's really good and important and something we have talked to death ad nauseum. I would like to take us a layer of abstraction a little deeper with that. Because oftentimes I wonder if we're going to insert a thought like this homeless person or, you know, this person from, you know, this that I'm never going to encounter once in a, you know, except for once in our life. And we think, okay, those are the people that God is putting in my life to have uncomfortable conversations with. Because again, it's very uncomfortable. I don't know what I'm doing. I've never met this person before. Right. And so that can be what we start looking for when we're looking like, I want to have these uncomfortable conversations. I want to take a step out of my comfort zone and have hard conversations about Jesus and about faith. And I wonder sometimes if we put that person there and it ends up kind of being a roadblock to the real uncomfortable conversations that we're supposed to be having. Conversations with people who we know very well, I've known for years, a coworker, a best friend, a family member who's, you know, taking some weird detours with things. Sometimes I feel like that's the uncomfortable conversations that are more impactful.
Yeah.
Because again, that there's more long-term relationship there, and the risk with those conversations, those uncomfortable conversations, feels so much higher.
Yeah.
So my question with that is first, just what is your response to that? And then how can we discern which uncomfortable conversations we should be having?
Mm-hmm. I think it's good, Austin, especially as you think of Jesus going up to Galilee, and just kind of this different kind of place, but he goes there. He doesn't just pop in for a few days. I mean, he ministers largely in that region for his entire ministry and going around that lake of Sea of Galilee and all, you know, and I think that's a picture of, it's not just this dropping in or to use the light kind of in the darkness. It's not like, oh, we drove past the cave and I threw a lamp in there.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I'm in this cave. Like, how do we bring light here? You know, we're going to be here a lot. And so, yeah, there's those opportunities for the people we know, where, oh, maybe I need to point out something, or maybe I just hesitated being more bold with the gospel and saying, hey, have you ever thought about going to church? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, have you read the Bible at all? Or just those questions we just tend to not bring up. Oh, it's my neighbor. I don't want to blow that relationship. So I think you're making a good point. And not that, of course, there could be absolutely the Spirit leading into
100. And yeah, I want to say, like, that is very clearly the Spirit does call us to that often.
Sure.
But again, I just wonder if we get so comfortable in that level of uncomfortability.
Well, yeah, or I excuse myself because I think, oh, well, yeah, here's kind of a missional context as far as like getting uncomfortable means, you know, going across the world and serving. Well, I'm not going to do that. So, well, I guess this wasn't for me.
Yeah.
Well, no. Yeah. Your mission field might not be, you know, somewhere in Asia or something like that.
It might be the folks at the construction company you work at.
Right. But God's got you there for a reason. You bear his light. What does that look like? Or in your family? I think sometimes, and it might be some of you listening, where you might be one of the few believers in your family,
yeah,
right? And so you're interacting a lot with folks, and maybe they're kind of like, what's going on with you in this? And yeah, how do we respond to those things? And yes, we want to be wise about it. We want to, of course, have the opportunity to let that light shine and be received by others. So we do need to think about, how do we communicate this in a winsome mm-hmm. way?
Yeah.
How do we, of course, we don't want to do it in a way where we're just destroying a relationship we have with a neighbor, a family, or friend. But at the same time, we shouldn't just avoid.
Yeah.
This is who we are. And people, I always say, they should know. If they know us well, right? Mm-hmm. A neighbor, they should know we're Christians. Just if we're conversing, we're talking about life, it should be clear just by the things I'm doing or not doing and the way we're living. But then there was that next step of talking more about it. And maybe, again, coming from that heart that we talked about with the first question, not, again, seeking attention, which in this case I think would be not wanting to tell you how I'm right and you're wrong, because we love doing that.
Or not so good at it.
But in this case, to say, I have a heart for you. And if we are communicating out of that, largely, not always, but largely, I think people will pick up on that and receive it well. And if you've already had a relationship with this person, I hope they know that.
Yeah.
You care about them as a family member, a friend, or coworker. And sometimes they'll lead and ask a question, but sometimes we got to bring it up. And, you know, it might just be sometimes that invitation to, you know, or even maybe it's just asking, you know, hey, this is something you ask about what I do. Have you ever gone to church before? Or have you ever done that? And maybe it just opens the door to some conversation. Or maybe it's a care thing where, you know, they're going through something, right? They've lost a loved one, or they're dealing with health issues or financial, and you just maybe say, hey, can I pray for you about that? You know, or how else can I support you in that? And those might open the door. I mean, that's can sometimes be quite uncomfortable to offer those things up.
Yeah.
But we can do those things. And I don't think those are things that are going to destroy the relationship to broach them or bring them up. And yeah, of course, following the leading of the Spirit, seeing those responses. Okay, well, that was met with resistance. And maybe I need to try a different way. But to completely avoid that, and I'm speaking to myself here too, is not what we should be doing, right? And a lot of that is more of my own, again, selfishness, because I don't want to get uncomfortable. Mm. I like the way things are. It's great for me, but that, is that really having the heart of Jesus for those in my life, especially those that, as Austin said, I'm with a lot. I see a lot. Why does God have me in these relationships?
So
I think it's a very good point and good challenge for us as we think about what is maybe that little stretching spot for us in our lives.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the insight there, Dan. What are we talking about next week on Easter?
So this obviously being Holy Week, we have a few different services with Good Friday and Easter, and Easter Sunday morning, kind of our main service, connecting with our wilderness theme a little bit and kind of taking you to the next step. So as we think about Jesus' resurrection, right, we're seeing now the fountain of new life being poured out, right? Jesus has been raised. And we're going to go to 1 Corinthians 15, where Paul talks about Jesus' resurrection and the importance of that for us to kind of see how through this, God's turning our wilderness into a garden. And Paul uses even the image to think about the promise that as Jesus has been raised in body, we will be too. And he talks about how even in our death, we're being planted like seeds in the ground. Mm. And just like a seed looks one way, but the plant comes up that looks different, so it will be with our new bodies, right? These bodies, these earthly tents, there's going to be some connection, of course, but they're going to be so much better.
Yeah.
There's going to be some difference in a very good way there. And just that promise of new life. So seeing how we're still in the wilderness now, we have this freedom in Christ, but he's also bringing us home and back to the garden, as it were, where life is flourishing. So looking forward to that, kind of bringing some of this series full circle, and of course, just marveling at the power of God and overturning death, and celebrating Jesus' resurrection and all that means for us today and forever. So.
Oh, so good. I'm so excited. Thank you, Dan, again, for your time today, for your insights. Thanks again to all of you. Again, we love doing this. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for you. So blessings on you all as you go into this Holy Week, and we'll see you next time.